Library Love.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to a brand new program on KYMN Radio, 95.1 FM, AM 1080, broadcasting to planet Earth on KYMNradio.net, maybe especially this week to Washington, D.C. We are joined by your host now. I can't even say we're joined because this is your show. Welcome, Natalie Draper.
Please. I wasn't prepared for that. This is wild. Thank you. Thank you, Rich and KYMN, for going with us on this adventure. I really love podcast.
I'm excited about this. Did you ever, like, when you were a little girl, did you ever, like, dream of having your own radio show / podcast?
Yeah, literally this. I was like, this is basically my entire life. I mean, honestly, I was born to be a librarian, but I'm definitely more of the behind the scenes type. Yeah. So the amount of time I've spent on the radio in the last few years.
Which has been substantial.
It has been. I can say that I never really thought that I would be doing that. So I appreciate it.
You're kind of a natural.
Why, thank you.
Anyway.
It is fun.
So what, I mean, you came to me and you said, hey, let's do this. Sounds like a good idea. I thought, yeah, this is great. But what is it that you are hoping to accomplish or promote or whatever? What is the show? What is it about the show you want to do? What do you want to do with the show there?
So I wanted a chance to get really nerdy about libraries. Like I said, this is my calling. This is my mission in life, is to be a librarian, and that is in service to the community. Mm-hmm. There's so much about what we do that is so mysterious to people. And I think that I want to demystify libraries. Mm-hmm. This is sort of the backstage tour for people, I think, right? But also, I want to share with people how much we love what we do.
Yeah.
And I think it's more fun when people know about that. Right.
Well, and mm-hmm. I mean, I think a lot of people, as much as we love our library here in Northfield, and we do.
Yeah, you do.
I think there are a lot of people that don't even grasp all the things that the library does and brings us, especially when we talk about things that happen outside of the library.
Oh, for sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So, like, this is going to be good.
I think this is going to be fun. I think what was I saying this morning, that, like, everybody knows the door of the library that they enter through. Yeah. And I think of that as like what services you are seeking through the library. So for some folks that may just be notary or printing something, mm-hmm. or hanging out, reading the paper, or getting a drink of water and using the bathroom. Like, all of these are the doors that people might enter. So, and people usually see what they came in for, and they may not actually see anything else. This is a chance to kind of dive into all of those different ways of using the library and all the ways that we think about and try to anticipate and respond to communities' needs.
Yeah.
And how we do that, and how we make it all work. But also getting really I want to be geeky here.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
So this is the wonky library podcast. So if you don't really want to know how it all works, this might not be for you, but I think it might still be. I think you're going to find something fun here.
This is the place for all of us nerds.
This is like everybody gets to go to library school. And believe me, I spent a lot of money on that. You don't have to. Just listen to this and we'll.
Okay. Before we talk about, and I think you and I are going to talk about National Library Week and a lot of the stuff that's happening in Washington, D.C. right now.
Yes.
I'm going to throw you a curveball.
Uh-oh.
All right, and address something that's not yet controversial, but could become controversial. The steps on Division Street that go to that are painted
our beloved storybook steps.
Yeah, exactly right. A couple of years ago, I remember reading that area had been like set to be remodeled, and that those storybook steps were not permanent. But they have become like an iconic part of Northfield.
I would say iconic is the right word.
Yeah.
No, so there will always be storybook steps at the Northfield Public Library.
Okay. All right.
They are cherished and a beautiful background. One of the reasons we went ahead and did the mural was thinking, well, let's beautify something that will need to be replaced, because the steps are in need of replacement at some point, mm-hmm. right? We take care of things, especially things that convey people up and down safely. If you do go up those steps, you'll notice the top steps are looking a little iffy right now. Mm-hmm. They've been patched and they're needing to be patched again. So we will be replacing them, but what we're doing is kind of reimagining that whole hillside mm-hmm. there. And we will absolutely be incorporating Storybook Steps okay. into those future plans because right. people have made it clear that they love them and I love them, and they show up and they've been in so many like graduation and school photo yeah. backgrounds. How could we not?
Senior picture. I see senior kids taking senior pictures there all the time.
Well, and what my office is right above that. Oh, and yeah. the windows are, I can hear everything that people say outside. By right. the way, everybody, I can hear everything you say.
She's listening, folks.
I hear it was so charming, especially when they were new, when they were brand new. Yeah. I could hear people just going, oh, like I could hear gasping and exclaiming on the steps and the kids. And I would hear a parent directing the kids to like, pick your favorite book and sit on the steps so I can take your picture. And it was so cute. Every time I'd look outside, I'd see families like gathering on the steps to get their pictures taken. So
that's awesome.
Like, I know how special these are. They are not going anywhere. If we do have to replace the staircase and do something, what we're hoping to do is, we'll say activate that hillside right mm-hmm. now. If you do look, you can see, because there's no leaves on the bushes mm-hmm. yet, that it's down to the landscaping fabric and it is yeah. eroded badly. Yes. It's eroded away from the building. We've got about a foot and a half of foundation insulation up above ground that the squirrels like to pick at.
Mm, that's fun.
I'm not sure. Like, it's probably not ideal, but we are looking right now. We're working with a landscape architecture firm to come up with a plan for how that hillside might actually be active community space.
Oh, cool.
Right. So like there's a lot of different things that you could do out there that I think would be a lot more welcoming as you enter downtown. And as you look across the street, yeah. you look at our like kind of scrubby kind of hillside there. Right. You think, what could this be?
Awesome.
So that's like we're always looking at what could be.
Okay. Okay. You're setting my mind at
okay,
ease.
Good.
Thank you very yeah. much. All right. So let's get down to the topic du jour. Where do we start here?
Where do we start? We're going to start with...
Let me ask you this.
The timeline, maybe.
I need to look at your notes for one second.
Sure.
I want to ask you, what does IMLS stand for?
Well, let's start
for?
At the beginning. Yeah. All right. Okay. So in 1996, the Institute of Museum and Library Services was established
okay.
in Washington, D.C.
In 96?
96, yes. Yeah, so okay. It actually hasn't been around that long, about 30 right. years. It's actually really hard for me to say out loud that 96 was... 30 years ago. I'm going to need a moment. but in short time, a very small agency that now represents about 0.003% of the federal budget has done a ton. And it's not just libraries, right? The mm-hmm, mm-hmm. museums are in there too, yeah. which is an interesting combination because we're actually quite different. I know absolutely nothing about museums except that I love them,
right?
And I want more of them, and right. I want them to thrive and do well. I was raised in museums and libraries. Like, this is my parents didn't have much money when I was growing up. We were in the military.
Yeah.
My dad was a captain in the Air Force. We moved a lot, yeah. and they really wanted me to get a lot of exposure to arts and culture and
that's cool.
history. And so we didn't have any money, and a lot of them were free.
Yes.
Or they had free days, or right. they let the kids in free. So we went to lots of museums everywhere.
That's
we
awesome.
Moved every 18 months sometimes, and we'd wow. visit all the museums. And the first thing we did when we hit a new town was to get our library card. So you always kind of knew you were home when you had your yeah. library card, right?
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. But that's it. The Institute of Museum and Library Services
okay.
has existed, past tense, for almost 30 years.
Almost 30 years.
Yeah.
And until last week, how many people did the Institute of Museum and Library Services employ? Do you know?
It was less than 100.
Oh,
so it was
okay.
a small agency, but yeah. it was, I think it was probably close to 100 people. That's the number that I've seen. So I assume they mean it's near right. 100.
But, so a really, really small department, mm-hmm. doing, like you said, doing great work. Tell us about the work that they've been doing.
So they fund a lot of things at the state library level, or here our state library services are embedded in the Minnesota Department of Education. So a lot of things that you might access, like just in Minnesota, access through Minitex, which mm-hmm. is actually through the University of Minnesota. And I talked about this on your show before, but we can dig into it a little bit more
yeah.
now. Interlibrary loan that moves around materials around the state. Northfield in our region is a very heavy user of interlibrary loan. We bring 200 to 300 items a month in through MinLinks, wow, Interlibrary Loan Service. And that is free to folks here, right? You just go online on our catalog and you request books. If you can't find your book here at the library, if you can't find it in Selco, you can probably find it through MinLink. And those books come fairly quickly, and they may be coming from Brainerd. They may be coming from Arrowhead Region. They may be coming from the U. We have a lot of folks who bring stuff in from the U's collection. There's generous lending around the state, and that is thanks to MinLink, and which is heavily supported by funding for IMLS, which I'll throw another acronym at you that we say as LISTA. Sometimes it's LSTA, and that's the Library Services and Technology Act. Okay. And that's actually the congressional funds that are appropriated that IMLS then distributes to states.
Okay.
Are we keeping up?
Yeah, I am. The one of the key points here is that this was money that was appropriated by Congress.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Keep going.
Yep. All right. So Congress said, because we hear from our constituents, because we know how valuable these are to an informed society, we know the libraries are a cornerstone of democracy, that we think they're worthy of 0.003% of the federal budget. and that is not a lot of money if you spread it out over the country, but it makes a huge difference.
Sure.
Here in Northfield recently, I mean, we've really been able to innovate in the last few years thanks to some of this funding. We funded our inclusive internship program, right? That was IMLS funding that came through us through MDE. So we had 4 interns that were either Torch participants at the high school. For those who don't know, I think most people around here probably know, that's Tackling Obstacles, Raising College Hopes. So it's making sure that students are college ready and have a plan for after school, especially students who may not historically have been as likely to attend college, right? Yep. So it's just kind of making that, say, equitable, I guess. I don't know.
Careful.
We might get a little political on this.
Let's just start the whole thing off with a bang, shall we?
And then Northfield Community College Collaborative, which is a fantastic partnership, right? Locally, students can access a community college education. I was a community college student myself, and I know how important they are in accessing higher education. That through Riverland Community College here in Northfield, they can access that education. So we wanted to see, would community college students consider pursuing a career in libraries if the internship, which is a really valuable part of trying to get in, right? It's actually a surprisingly competitive field. A lot of our positions require a master's degree, which can seem like a really high bar to a community college student. So what we wanted to do was make one, they talk about tearing the paper ceiling, right? Do we grow local and have folks who grew up in the community who are really in touch with their community then move into positions in the library and really enhance the way that we're able to serve our community with a lot of local knowledge? Do we increase the likelihood that these students might want to pursue a master's in library science, which we then help them with, right? So with that funding, federal funding, we wanted to make that accessible to students who might have otherwise not considered a career in libraries. So we think it is a real service to the community to have a very diverse staff.
I would agree with that.
We do. We have a very diverse staff here, and we're very interested in hiring people in the community. And I love bringing in Northfield High School students and graduates. And I love it when they come back. You know, they go away to college and come back and work here.
Yeah,
so that's
great.
I think we serve our community well with a lot of community knowledge.
I think so too. Yeah. I think so too. Mm-hmm. Without that federal funding,
I mean, we wouldn't have been able to do that.
Is that program now entrenched in the budget, or is it continuing through that federal funding?
The Friends of the Library.
Okay.
So it was a 1-year pilot that we had, maybe the last year of LSDA funding. Who knows, right? Where this goes.
Yeah.
Maybe we were one of the last grant recipients. Wow. So the program was so successful, in our opinion, and the Friends agreed with us, that the Friends supported the internship. Right. So this was their fundraising effort. at the end of last year, and they did meet their goal. And so we are right now actually about to interview our candidates who nice. Are Torichore and Triple C.
That's awesome.
Students. So we'll be hiring probably two.
Okay.
We were able to do four with the first cohort because we wanted a good sample. We wanted a good number of folks to participate the first year, so you have something to report back. Because usually this is the thing. I got to tell you, if anybody's ever had a federal grant or applied for a federal grant, they don't just give this money away.
No.
These are really, really labor-intensive applications. They are extremely careful about how this money is given out. There isn't a penny of this grant money that is actually being wasted.
Right. Well, and once they give you the money, they want to know basically
they know how
they
you
want
spend
an accounting
it.
Of everything yeah. you're doing. Yeah.
Right. And that's not to say that there aren't some people who you know are up mm-hmm. no good. And of course that's going to happen, period, because people are people.
Sure.
But the vast majority of this is money that directly serves communities. Mm-hmm. And it's in a way, like I was saying, that like we know specifically that this will work here. I don't expect to be able to take this and apply it somewhere else in exactly the mm-hmm. same way. But it allowed us to innovate on behalf of the community in a way that directly served the community.
At the same time, though, Northfield's not so unique that it wouldn't work anywhere
yeah,
else.
You I mean, definitely tweak this. And we've presented on this at conferences now and have a lot of really great questions about... Well, how about this, that, and the other, when you can tell people are thinking, how can I tailor this to my community? Mm-hmm. And when we presented on this at the Minnesota Library Association conference last fall, we had a full house at like 8 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
Right? Yeah. Which I'm not a morning person. So I was there presenting with Angelica Linder and Nadine Villa, who's one of the interns actually that we had.
That's awesome.
And so it was really great to be able to take her to the conference and present with her.
Oh, that's cool.
Right? I mean, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, one of the other things we were able to build in to that initiative that made it successful, and we were tailoring it to the needs of Community College Collaborative students, a lot of them are parents.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that you're thinking if you're a working parent putting yourself through school is the cost of childcare is real high. We know that this is a nationwide thing that is a big problem
yes.
for a lot of people. Right.
Yeah.
We know.
Right.
So we were able to build into the grant a stipend to cover childcare expenses during the span of the internship,
mm-hmm.
just to make that accessible, inclusive, if you will, for our interns to be able to participate. So you don't have to worry about like, am I just doing this internship? It was paid to.
Mm-hmm.
Am I doing this internship just to work for the cost of childcare so that I can try to improve my career chances to try to compete in a field where people have had a lot more access to things than I have because they've grown up wealthy or privileged or whatever, that this is our way of making that more accessible.
Wow.
And,
all right.
Yeah. So, but that is now I'm going to just, can I share something? I mean, I'm big on visual aids, right? So
sure.
I just to point out, like, I mean, you can just, you know, freely feel free to disagree with me on like whether or not this is a worthwhile expenditure.
Okay.
To us, it was, you know, whatever. But the IMLS, now, the Institute of Museum and Library Services, was eliminated by executive order on March 14th. The staff was put on administrative leave a few days later.
Yeah.
Some lawyer was appointed as the director. He put out a statement, a few days after it was eliminated by executive order. So like, when you eliminate something, are you interested in investing in that thing further?
No.
Right. No, it's gone.
It's
right?
gone.
It's done.
It's over.
So I'm just going to read, because this was his words.
Sure.
This was Keith Sonderling, who is now the acting director of the Institute of Museum and Library Services, such as it is now, says it is an honor to be, I'll read the whole thing. It's an honor to be appointed by President Trump to lead this important organization in its mission to advance, support, and empower America's museums and libraries, which stand as cornerstones of learning and culture in our society. Interesting.
Yeah, okay.
I am committed to steering this organization, an organization that exists, in lockstep with this administration to enhance efficiency and foster innovation. All right. Okay. Interesting.
No one's going to argue with efficiency or fostering.
Right. I love efficiency. Right. And we innovate all the time. Yeah, like, let's talk, right?
Yeah.
We will revitalize IMLS and restore focus on patriotism, ensuring we preserve our country's core values, promote American exceptionalism, and cultivate love of country in future generations. So I'm just, I've sat with this a lot, and I'm trying to figure out, one, how are you revitalizing something you've eliminated? Mm-hmm. So I'm like, what are you talking about? Are we eliminating and building it back? Are we going to build it back better or something?
Right.
I don't know. We're restoring a focus on patriotism, which I'm on the library side of things, and I can't speak for museums, but I can tell you that while we all consider ourselves to be patriotic, mm-hmm. we love our country, mm-hmm. I don't think it's our focus or mission. Like, I'm not sure that actually necessarily is the best use of taxpayer money. I can put it that way. It's great, right?
Patriotism's fantastic.
Yeah, right. It is great. And our country's core values, absolutely, which I think libraries are actually a really great kind of example of America's values. Like, it's probably our best export, I would say. I would think it's actually one of the coolest things America's invented are public libraries.
I'm actually sort of running through the preamble of the Constitution in my head. We the people, in order to perform a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, and promote the general welfare.
Look at you.
Okay. The libraries do that.
Literally that. Yes.
Yeah.
Like, yes.
And, you know, secure the blessings of liberty.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. All right. Sorry.
So all of that kind of, they're like, in that, and I don't want to put words in this man's mouth. I don't know, but these are his words. But it does seem to imply that we have somehow lost our way. Somehow.
Yes.
And that something that the IMLS has been doing with that 0.003% of the federal budget has been somehow unpatriotic.
Well, what I don't understand about what's going on here, Natalie, is that and this is something you and I were talking about off air. Mm. How are we now saying that patriotism and diversity, equity, and inclusion are in direct opposition to each other? How does that work? I'll go bring me your tired, your poor, your mm-hmm. hundred masses yearning to be free. Like, this is all the great American melting pot, right? That's patriotism. Right.
That's been on the story.
That's a core value.
Identity, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. So, so I'm just going to share, and like I said, I'm big on visual aids here on the radio, I'm going to bring that energy.
She's famous for this. Get used to this, folks. It's great.
It just gets people to really listen, right?
Right.
Like, describe it for me, what you're saying. I happen to stumble on the IMLS Instagram account. Mm-hmm. And it does appear to be theirs. It's tagged by a lot of libraries for years. It's existed for quite a while. I will say there's a tone shift in recent days. And then this was posted the date, I'll finish the timeline here. So what did I say? The 14th it was eliminated. The 20th it was going to be renewed focus on patriotism. And then yesterday, all of those employees that were on administrative leave, the almost 100 or so people who work for museums and libraries in mm-hmm. Washington mm-hmm. were eliminated. They were fired. So effective May 3rd. So I guess they get a month to be on leave and find a job. I'm not sure exactly how that works out.
Okay.
But for my colleagues out there in Washington, we are thinking about you right now. But they posted to their Instagram that same day that they told those 100 or so people that they were no longer employed by the Institute of Museum and Library Services, that, quote unquote, the era of using your taxpayer dollars to fund DEI grants is, all caps, over. And then they have a slideshow, which if you didn't read the caption, you might be like, oh, that's nice. Here's what your tax dollars were funding, past tense, at the IMLS. And if you swipe, you see that a whopping $105,000 was used to address systemic racism in museums.
And of course, I want to ask, we're only spending $105,000 to...
That was exactly what I thought. I was like, well, that is not going to do it.
Yeah, sorry.
That is not enough. Then there's actually 1.5 million for social justice programming.
Again, we're only spending 1.5 million.
Probably be putting more towards that.
Yeah.
And that's just the tip of the iceberg, it says, Rich. And that 6.7 million to enhance equitable library programs is the top of that list. And that is where our little grant sits. Equitable library programs, which I think that, like, I want to say we have worked really hard at this library to be inclusive in our programming and to make our services and our programs more equitable and to bring those out into the community close to where people live, right? Library Oasis. We talked about this morning our DIA program, the Day of the Book and Day of Children and celebration at the Library Oasis. And that's a place that a lot of people go to, you know, maybe they go and visit the food shelf and they can visit this beautiful puppet show happening out of that Oasis. And it's in English and Spanish. And to think that that might be considered unpatriotic makes me actually really sad.
It makes me sad. Yeah, it makes me it makes me sad. Also, makes me incredibly angry.
I'm incredibly angry underneath the sadness.
Yes. Okay.
Can I just share before we bring in our colleagues?
Please.
Because I don't. We're here to celebrate National Library Week. Yeah. This is dropping on the Wednesday of National Library Week. It's actually National Library Outreach Day, which is something that we have really devoted ourselves to. And so when I feel sad, because sometimes I read the news maybe a little bit too much, and I'm trying to maybe detox from that a little bit, but I want to know what's going on. So I've been reading, as you might imagine, that a librarian sometimes finds time to read. I'm going back and forth between my first love, and it has given me a lot of comfort in the last few years, vintage Stephen King.
Really?
Yeah. And I have a funny story, which I'll tell you later, about Stephen King if we have time.
Okay.
And the correspondence that I had with him when I was in middle school.
My gosh. Mm-hmm. I want to hear about that.
And we'll tell you later. Yeah. So listen, folks, keep listening. The other thing I've been reading, because my husband bought me one of these for Christmas, and I hadn't really gotten onto this genre yet, except for Before the Coffee Gets Cold. I had read that, and I really liked it. But there are these... I'll just say, I don't know what the genre is, but they are cozy Japanese novels.
Okay.
They're a little cozy. They're cozy.
Okay.
They usually have cats, bookstores, libraries, and coffee shops. And they are just charming. There's like a fantasy element. They're like if Haruki Murakami was writing like cozy mysteries, maybe, instead of what he writes, which is one of my favorite authors, but kind of dark and strange and surrealist. Mm-hmm. But these have like a... element of the surreal, but they're more straightforward storytelling, but that they're like having cake for breakfast. I don't know how to describe it, but then also vintage Stephen King kind of to like balance out, because you have to have a little like
right.
And that's so anyway, I wanted to make sure to recommend some books for folks and to encourage you to find something, which I'm sure the library has something for you.
Absolutely.
It will get you through.
Absolutely. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And we're going to bring in our this week's special guests. This is Library Love. Don't go away.
Library Love.
Welcome back to Library Love, the first installment of what we hope to be a long-running program and podcast. Natalie, would you like to introduce our special guests?
I would love to introduce our special guests. Couple of our librarians who spend a lot of time working with and thinking about and purchasing items for the library. So I have Caitlin and Tyler. Caitlin is our collection development librarian, and Tyler's our emerging technology librarian. So I kind of teased this morning a little bit, but I wanted to have them join us to talk a little bit about the kind of nuts and bolts of ebooks. And the lending models, the pricing models, how that kind of all works. We've made some recent changes lately to our Hoopla platform, which I know has been kind of a disappointment to us and to other folks who really enjoy that. But we wanted to kind of demystify, I guess, ebooks and why it's so expensive, why it's so important for us to be able to have these collections. And these are my two folks who probably know the most about that. So. Do you want to?
Yay. Thanks, Natalie. Yeah. I'm really glad to be here. So I guess like the first thing that I wanted to say is just one thing that really surprises people the most about ebooks is that in most cases, ebooks are not instant access, so that can be confusing to people. So you think that because it's a digital book, it's not something that you have in your, you know, like a physical item that you have in your hands, that multiple people could use it at the same time, but that's not typically the case. So how it works is, well, with the library, we have typically provided ebooks and through a company called Overdrive, which is like the number one company that provides ebooks to libraries across the country. And you might have heard of Overdrive. You might have heard of their app called Libby. They're sort of like the big major player. And that's the vendor that we've had for a long time. So ebooks and audiobooks from Overdrive are available in a couple different pricing models, which when you're accessing ebooks from the as a patron, you can't tell that. You don't know anything about that kind of back end of it, but it has to do with how much it costs for the library and how those work. But for most of the pricing models that we can buy ebooks from Overdrive, only one person can have that book at a time.
Right. Which is kind of wild given, like, right, thinking about that, like this digital resource that theoretically a million people could be using simultaneously, whereas like one physical book, only one person can actually hold it typically. I mean, I guess you could have a couple of people sitting side by side, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's just lines of code after all, and who controls the code? And it's publishers. Publishers are the people who set the prices on the marketplace with from where we buy our ebooks and our e-audiobooks, and they're the ones who get to determine what the licensing models are for a particular title. And you'll often see some of the newer or more popular titles have more restrictive lending models. And those, I mean, just for reference, those lending models typically look like one of a few different things. One of them we call one copy, one user. It's very much like a physical book. We buy a one copy, one user book, and one person can use one copy at a time. We can buy multiple copies, but obviously that's going to cost more money. It's very much like buying a physical book. So we might buy a couple one copy, one user items so that multiple people could have it at the same time. They also have something that they call metered access, which very much is like it sounds. Your access to that copy is metered by some set of standard that the publisher has put out. It's usually time-based or checkout-based. So you might have a metered access by 12 months where we purchase the rights to provide that book to our patrons for a 12-month time period, and once that 12 months is up, they cut off access. Same thing for a 24-month. There's another one that we sometimes buy. This one, maybe less so, and it's by checkout. So you can have a metered access by checkout. Sometimes it's 26, sometimes it's 52, sometimes it's 100, and it kind of depends. And the price stacks up with the more checkouts that you have. Within that metered access by checkout, you have some that are what we call simultaneous use. So an instance when we might buy a simultaneous use, metered access, 100 checkout item, is if we've got a very popular book, think The Women by Kristen Hanna, we see that we've got a hold list that is 99 people long. We know that we can spend $100 right now to clear 100 holds for the patrons in our system. And a lot of times that makes sense with books that maybe don't have the long-term staying power of certain kinds of titles. We know that they're popular now, but their popularity wanes relatively quickly within the whole bookosphere.
I'm thinking like Prince Harry's bio, right?
Spare.
Yeah.
Spare.
There yep. You go. Like, I think like that one's really popular for a minute and then maybe not enduring, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and the cost on those typically ranges for an ebook between $25 and $60. And an audiobook or an e-audiobook, should I say, can range anywhere from $60 to upwards of $150, depending on what the book is. And a lot of times perceived popularity when it comes out. What's up?
I have a question. Okay. $125 bucks for an audiobook.
Yep.
At at some point, does this cease to be cost effective for the library? I mean, why would you even, if it's that much of an investment, why would you guys go there?
Right. So that's a great question. I think, just to put that in perspective, so maybe the e-audiobook is $100. The book on CD, which most people don't have CD players anymore,
right.
That might cost $50.
Yeah.
So for a physical mm-hmm. audiobook. So, so everything's relative. So it is expensive, but also we know that a lot of our checkouts are coming more and more from digital items. Mm-hmm. So that's the fastest growing circulation for the library is all the digital mm-hmm. items.
Right.
Yeah. Just to speak on that, we last year spent 11% of our collection budget on digital materials, specifically in Libby and Overdrive. And that that made up 17% of our total circulation of all physical wow. and digital items just in Libby.
Wow.
But you pointed out, I think, an interesting and important fact that e-audiobook costs 2 to 3 times more than the physical object. So that does become a challenge when it's my job to yeah. put together the budget.
Yeah, and it makes sense that it costs that much when you mm-hmm. consider how much goes into making an audiobook compared mm-hmm. to making an ebook. You have to hire people to mm-hmm. do the reading. You have they're much larger file sizes, and you know.
Yeah.
And they're incredibly popular.
Yes, very popular. Yeah. You know, when you get someone like Andy Serkis doing his Gollum impersonation oh and Lord of the Rings readings, like, why wouldn't you want that?
Exactly.
I'm a huge fan of Eduardo Valerini as a reader. Mm-hmm. He's read pretty much everything. I think he's the guy who reads the Bible, but he's just an outstanding audiobook narrator. So, yeah big fan.
So do we want to kind of talk a little bit about this hoopla
oh, yes.
thing that we're going through right now?
The hoopla?
Yeah,
the hoopla.
I think hoopla. We should. And hoopla is different from what we've talked about before mm-hmm. with Overdrive and Libby, because hoopla works on that simultaneous checkout model that you were talking about, Tyler.
Simultaneous and instantaneous.
Right, exactly. No, so rather than seeing the wait list that we see in Overdrive and Libby, which again goes to the fact that only one person can typically have it at a time and it costs more, in Hoopla, we're only paying for what is used. So it's a cost per checkout for the library. So that's kind of why we started with Hoopla, was as a way to get around the wait list in Overdrive. And Hoopla, as we've had it in Northfield, is specifically only for Northfield Public Library patrons. It's not for our whole consortium. It's not a shared thing. It's just for folks here.
Yeah. And, you know, to kind of put Hoopla into perspective, you know, I talked about an e-audiobook costing maybe $150 to buy for Libby. Mm-hmm. Well, last year we spent almost $300 to $400 on Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone audiobook on Hoopla. And that is because only one e-audiobook copy was available on Libby. So we could have bought 2 copies of the e-audiobook for Libby that would be shared with our entire library consortium for the cost that we paid just to have that instant access for our Hoopla users. And that wasn't just Harry Potter. It was Remarkably Bright Creatures, The Women, the McFadden books that were really popular last year. So it's across all these titles that get really popular really quickly, or some titles like Harry Potter, which have that perennial mm-hmm. fan base. Mm-hmm.
So what we were seeing was really that money, that same money that we spent in Hoopla could have been used so much more effectively in Overdrive if we would have just moved that over. So that's mm-hmm. what we're looking to do now.
Yeah, and a big, I think maybe a philosophical reason why we want to do this is, you know, in the name of library love. We are in this consortium with a group of libraries who are all putting a big part of their budget towards our shared Libby Overdrive collection, as well as like the administrative arm of Selco also putting in tons of money to build this Libby collection. Mm-hmm. And we just see it as a way of making sure that our entire consortium is sharing these materials with each other and we're growing this collection together. And it just makes sense. And it's going to make for a much more full collection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's better access for everybody. It's also predictable expense with Libby, whereas we have really no idea until the money's spent with Hoopla because we're billed after the fact.
Wow.
So, right. So that's where we hit kind of like a, oh no moment where we realize we were hitting the absolute maximum of what we could possibly spend on that. And when we looked into what people were checking out, there was just no value to it.
Interesting.
So we could just be buying that at in Libby's collection, and to their point, actually making that available to everybody.
Yeah. Yep. The other thing that I think about when it comes to the comparison of Hoopla versus Libby is that in Hoopla, we really don't have any control over what is in that collection. Mm. That's not something that that we as librarians are selecting or choosing. Right. That's just a huge pool of stuff that they put out, and they advertise, this is how many... huge number of items, a million items, millions of items that you have access to that your patrons can choose from. A lot of that is just garbage. Yep, you know, slush. It's not actually the books that people want to check out. Whereas when we're looking at what we put into Overdrive or Libby, each of those books is chosen by some library staff member in the in the system. So someone is picking that for a reason.
And those choices are made by people who know about the book landscape, who are paying attention to like high quality reviews. We're able to look at statistics, like within Libby, there's a button that you can press if you find a book that you want that we don't have called Notify Me. And that tag is applied to every book on the back end where we see it in the marketplace. So we know what our patrons are wanting if they're asking for it.
Okay. Interesting.
Yes. Oh, it's back to me. So I wanted to ask a question about some of the other ways that we've made, electronic content, we'll say. I mean, like graphic novels are one thing that are available on Hoopla that I think people do appreciate the selection that they had. So we were looking at another resource and I think have decided we're probably going to go forward with this one. But it's a slightly different model and platform too for people to get used to. But I know that Rich was telling me that he's been reading comic books.
It's how I fall asleep
lately,
at night. Yeah.
Right? Excellent. And that counts as reading. Yeah. I just want to say, much like audiobooks, also count as reading.
Yep.
That we're looking, exploring another option to make graphic novels, and this is a little bit more cost effective too.
Yes, we are looking at a service called Comics Plus, which is available on the web, on your phone, and it looks super nice on an iPad or a tablet. But we'll be paying one flat fee for that for the year, and we'll have access to all of these huge comic book publishers. And it looks nice. It's got a great UI, very functional, and super cost effective. And it's just another way that we can provide a different kind of material through that digital platform that a lot of people are gravitating towards.
That's super cool.
Based on our population size, is that how that's priced? I can't remember.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so that's another way that some vendors will price things for libraries is based on our population. So we do, that is something that does get restricted to like our immediate borrowing area, right?
It's worth mentioning too that for that flat price, we're able to get instantaneous use for everything within their collection. So it's kind of opposite of the entire industry in that way.
Mm-hmm. And it's unlimited too, correct?
Yes. Yeah. There's no limitations on how many checkouts.
Like Hoopla, we're putting a borrowing limit on.
So when you say that you've got access to all these comic book publishers, does that include Marvel and DC and some of the other more popular ones?
Yes, there is one holdout that I can't remember the name of right now, but there's like, you've got IDW, Fantagraphic, Image. The selection is massive.
Okay.
Yeah, really,
that's super
really
cool.
Good stuff.
That's awesome, actually.
Yeah, I know I saw Dark Horse on there, so I assume the DC's on there as well.
Yeah, okay.
Marvel may be the holdout, but I feel like I remember seeing Spider-Man.
Well, I subscribe to Marvel Unlimited, and it costs me $70 a year, and I get, I think I've got access to about 75% of what they offer. So even if you're maybe you might want to just think about getting into Marvel Unlimited too. Anyway.
Well, imagine like you know, you're a big spender, right? But imagine somebody, you're looking at me, honey. You can't see that at home, but imagine somebody who could not afford
right.
that Marvel Unlimited
right.
subscription that,
right.
to be able to get that from the library.
Oh, that's, I mean, that
pretty,
makes me
pretty
super happy because yeah.
Even you, like.
I want kids to have the same experience
right.
I had when I was
reading comics. More kids
reading comics,
too.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Anyway. All right. Cool.
Good chat.
All right.
Did you learn everything you need to learn about?
Not even close. But that's why we're going to do this on a monthly basis.
I do feel like it's important to plug before we wrap this little section up that if you want to get Libby and Overdrive on your device, it's available on the App Store or on the Google Play Store, depending on which phone you have. If you want to come to the library and get some help setting it up, everyone on staff knows how to do that. We can show you how to check them out. We can show you how to get an audiobook. We can show you how to get these books on your Kindle, because that is an option. It'll just shoot it right over. So something to consider.
Awesome.
I see that you brought some visual aids, too.
We
did. Do you want to share your resource pick right
yes.
now?
Yes. So, Caitlin, how about you go first?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I'm actually really excited about this book. I've been talking about it to everybody. Okay, so the book that I brought is called Never Saw Me Coming, How I Outsmarted the FBI and the Entire Banking System and Pocketed $40 million, which is a really long title, by author Tanya Smith. So this is a book with a local connection. Tanya Smith grew up in Minneapolis. Her family owned the Capri Theater, and she knew Prince growing up.
Oh, wow.
It starts out as just like a really entertaining, like kind of caper, and then it becomes this high stakes, like thriller as she goes from being a fugitive to being an inmate to finally being an ex-con for all her white collar crimes and bank fraud that she did at a really high level. So, but my favorite part of the book was as she's telling her life story, she talks about how she started out as really small. Like as a young girl, she would do these like petty cons, like calling the phone company to get long distance calls for free. And she would impersonate people over the phone and try to meet her hero, Michael Jackson.
Wow.
And stuff like that. So then eventually she's leveling this up and she's hacking into bank computer systems and wiring money, which is then picked up by people that she hires from her neighborhood. And this is all based on a true story. So it's wild. Basically, things kind of spiral from there, and soon she's stealing millions of dollars at a time.
Have the film rights been optioned?
They have. And okay. The greatest thing, I'm so excited about this. So the book has been in the Star Tribune. They reviewed it. Yes, they are making it into a movie. It's going to star Janelle Monáe.
Oh,
it's going to be so great. But I still feel like it's really under the radar. So, you know, get the book now and read it.
I remember reading about that in the Star Tribune.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
All right.
And what I got in front of me is a record. The library checks out records, mm-hmm. if you did not know, as well as a portable record player. And it's one of my favorite records of this year so far by a band called Mogwai. The record's called The Bad Fire. They're a Scottish post-rock instrumental group. Very timely. And it's always good to hear an instrumental band who's making music that can make you feel like you're in a time and place, and that is very much this album. And then I just got a plug a book I read earlier this year called To Save the Man by an author director named John Sayles, who made this incredible movie Matewan about unionization of the coal mines on the East Coast. Just incredible. But the book itself is about a group of Indian children who are sent out to the Carlisle School. So this is based on a true story, and it's kind of about their experience. And he's been writing it for over 20 years, collecting, you know, newspaper clippings and all that stuff from all over that area to really make it hit. And it's a very powerful book. Yeah.
All right.
Awesome.
Tyler and Caitlin, thanks so much for being here and imparting your wisdom.
Yes, thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks for having us.
We'll be right back, folks. We're going to take another quick break and have one more segment. Don't go away.
Library Love.
Welcome back to Library Love and just a dizzying array of special guests on this first inaugural episode. Natalie, who do we have joining us now?
We have Alexis, our adult programming and outreach librarian, on with us to talk a little bit about the Latino Cocina Project. This is a grant-funded cookbook, community cookbook that we're working on. And I really kind of wanted to make sure that we wrapped on this initiative and some of the other things that Alexis works on in her role, because her job was one that's a new, actually fairly new position for us, mm-hmm. right? She was the first person to have this job here, really focusing on broadening who we are reaching with our programming, right? Mm-hmm. And it goes back to that thing we were talking about in the beginning with how we feel like we are serving our community especially well by embracing mm-hmm. community knowledge and interests and delivering programs that are appealing to everybody, folks who have not maybe traditionally found themselves or seen themselves in library programming. Mm-hmm. So it's inclusive, mm-hmm. it is diverse, and we try to deliver it equitably.
Yeah. Yes. Well, thanks so much for having me on. I've been on with Paula on Art Zany before, but it's exciting to have our own little space here for Library Love.
Paula's
so going to
be ticked off at me that we gave the library their own show.
We talked about it. She's okay. We can still go on Art Zany. That's
okay. Good. That's good. Okay. We're not stepping on toes. But yeah, I've been at the library for almost 2 years now. And this is a project that I think is going to be the highlight of my career so far, for sure. It's a book called Northfield Cocina. And as Natalie mentioned, it's grant funded. And this is through SELCO, which is our regional library consortium.
SELCO stands for Southeast Library
Cooperating.
Yes. Okay.
Southeastern Libraries Cooperating.
Okay. Yeah. And they do a lot for us in terms of just like getting the books that you need delivered mm-hmm. to the hold shelf on time. But then they also make a lot of funding available to us for programming and then things like this. This is actually the same grant that we used for Bridge and Division last year. Mm-hmm. Tyler's a really great project featuring poems taking place all around Northfield.
Yeah.
So same grant, which is a Community Reads grant. And
is that legacy funding?
It is, okay. Yes. Yes. So it trickles down from the mm-hmm. state level, but SELCO divvies it up to us.
Okay.
So yeah, we are super excited about this. So it's a community cookbook from the Latino community here in Northfield. We are looking for a diverse group of home cooks. We have a few countries covered, Mexico, Colombia, and Peru. If you're from one of those beautiful countries, we would love to hear your recipes, but if you're not from one of those beautiful countries, we would extra love to hear your recipes because we're looking for about 20 recipes from truly all over the Latin American diaspora. And how it's going to work is submit your recipes. We have a Google form sign up that we'll include in the description to the podcast. It's also on our website and everywhere. And then there are two photo shoot days in May. May 17th from 1 to 5 and May 21st from 4 to 8. One is a Sunday and one's a weeknight. What you'll do is you'll make your dish, you'll bring it to the library, and then we have a local Latinx photographer, Rio Perez, and they will take your photo, and we'll have professional photos of your dishes as well as a portrait of you with your dishes, which is really awesome. And then the cookbook is going to be full color, spiral bound. I was very insistent on the spiral bound as someone who cooks a lot and needs things on the counter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hopefully going to be published in October. So
awesome.
It's a long-term project, but something we're really excited about. I'm working with my coworker Angelica Linder, who does so much work with the Latino community here. So we're really thrilled. The idea behind this was really my kind of side gig. My other job is at the Northfield History Center. I'm the collections manager there. So I spend a lot of time in the archives, and we have this shelf that's probably, you know, 20 books deep of cookbooks from all over the Northfield community. The Northfield News cookbook, the Northfield Hospital Auxiliary cookbook, all kinds of church cookbooks, mm-hmm, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, what's missing here, right? And there's a pretty glaring omission. And I just love that the church cookbook is such a deeply held Midwestern tradition.
It is.
And it's a way that we pass on our history and our memories. And let's include this community that is so important to us and great, you know, shares their great food with us.
Celebrating the rich Midwestern tradition of the Jell-O salad.
Yes. So I am personally really looking forward to just seeing all the dishes, hopefully trying some, cooking them myself. So yeah, we hope folks will come and join us. May 1st is the deadline to sign up. So please, sign up. We'd love to have you.
Cool. That's a really cool idea. And I love that it comes from looking at all these cookbooks that are at the History Center and going, yeah, there is a major omission in there. Where is the Latino community in this? And frankly, this is my favorite kind of food.
So yes,
same.
And we have so many great restaurants in town that cook this kind of food.
Yeah.
You know, we have people that cook tamales out of their home kitchens and sell them. So it's really, it's so integral to how we create community as food, in my opinion. So I really, I'm really just thrilled to have this out there.
It seems like, I feel like food is the, like, food and cooking is the language that we share across, like, all boundaries, right? Mm-hmm. Like, everybody likes to eat. Mm-hmm. Everybody likes good food. Mm-hmm. I was telling Gretchen this earlier, we were following the twins at the beginning of the season.
Yep.
For better or worse, you stick with your team.
You know, exactly. And you stick with your team.
But we were in Chicago visiting the White Sox, and I was like, it's really hospitable ballpark, wonderful, very few people. We're all in it together. And they had a food stand that was Polish Colombian fusion. And I was like, that is the most spectacularly hospitable Midwestern thing I've ever seen. And I love it so much. That is so Chicago. And I'm like, more of that energy in 2025, Polish Colombian fusion. It was so good.
Kielbasa and like a pupusa?
Basically, it was kielbasa and like arepas.
Yum.
Oh.
I know.
That actually makes me want to go to Comiskey Park.
Comiskey. It is still Comiskey.
Yeah, it's new Comiskey, but it's Comiskey. Yeah.
It'll never be whatever they're calling it.
I don't
now
even know what they call it anymore.
It's Rate Field, and I just can't handle that. But that Rate. Polish club.
Oh, it was like
guaranteed rate.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, we digress. Anyway.
Yes. But what I'm really excited to see is how people have adapted their recipes from their home countries or from their parents' or grandparents' home countries to be able to make them here in Northfield, Minnesota, right? You probably can't get all the ingredients you get in Mexico or Colombia or Peru. So how do you adapt it and make it also part of our traditions, right?
Exactly.
What foods do we have here? For my family, we're German. Horseradish is a huge deal, right? So I just think of, again, the day that we all jar horseradish is the same as the tamale day in a Latino family.
Yeah.
And so it really is just this huge cultural connection that I think it's going to be fully bilingual. So English on one side, Spanish on the other. So really just making sure everyone's able to participate.
I love it. Mm-hmm. Can I ask one question, sort of bigger picture? You said that this was your idea. And you talked about Tyler had the idea for the poetry around Northfield. So Natalie, when the people who work at the library have an idea, and these are happening, how does that process work? Is that something that you ask your people to come to us with ideas, or do people just sort of naturally do this? And how does it all come together?
I would say it's that love of library.
Yeah,
There is a certain type of person, I think, that gravitates to library work now, and it's the sort of person who really does love providing resources to the community. And sometimes if the resource doesn't exist, that we will work with the community to create that resource. And we at the library, I think, like to empower our staff.
Yeah.
You know, when grants are made available and Selco makes these available to us, grant funding, to go back to our earlier conversation, is one way that we are able to innovate and meet those kind of service, maybe gaps in our community. So as we see that sort of tightening up and turning off in some spaces, that will impact that. But we have creative people on our staff, and we have great community partners here, and so that is part of Alexis's job, to just be creative, and she does a good job of that. Tyler too. Great. I mean, a lot of her folks, like I get to say yes to a lot of things, which is a fun job.
Isn't that
to
fun?
Have, right? It is fun to get to say yes to things and find ways to make things possible.
I will say from my end, having this idea, it was also kind of, I went to a conference, and being able to go to conferences and have that development and see other new ideas. There was a library in California that did a very small scale version of this that was focused on Chinese immigrants living in like senior living facilities that they did outreach to. And they had the print booklet that was, again, one side Mandarin, one side English, and these community recipes. And then that paired with this little thing that had been needling the back of my head about the shelf at the History Center. And I went to my supervisor, Angelica, and when Angelica gets a light in her eyes, and when Angelica says out. Yes, there is nothing that can get in her way.
That woman is a force of nature.
Yes. No, so I knew that between the two of us, we would be able to make it happen. So I know that I have the support when I need resources, mm-hmm. that they are available for me, which I really appreciate.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the kind of the genesis of some of these kinds of projects is that people come to us and ask for something, right? And we're in the business of listening and trying to find things for mm-hmm. people. And so mm-hmm. it comes from that, like, that interaction with the community is we're all day long, we're talking to people and having these conversations. They're coming just and asking for something. And if we can't find it or if we see the need for it, then we're going to try to, you know, get it mm-hmm. and connect people with that. So it's just a lot of, I would say we look for people who are very, We try to be very responsive as an organization.
Sure.
I think we look mm-hmm. for people who kind of think about responding to need in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, something else I can talk about, an upcoming program that I think meets that niche. On April 13th, we're going to have our first, as far as I've done, my first headshot day at the library.
Right.
So if you need a professional photo taken, you can come. And that's another grant-funded project. We have a grant through the ALA, the American Library Association, and Capital One that's getting funded through. And when we're talking about, like, finding a niche, but also finding how to fill that niche. This was a great example because I ran into the student who does all of the photographs for St. Olaf's Career Center. Mm. Every single headshot that comes through, he does. And he was one of my interns over at the History Center at my other job. So I was able to be like, hey, have you ever considered doing a headshot program at the library? And of course he never had. But I was able to be like, hey, we can pay you money to come and take photos at the library. And it can be grant funded. We reached out to the Clothes Closet, and they're going to be able to provide clothes for folks who can't or don't have business attire to wear.
That's
so
amazing.
It's really just cool. Pulling in all of these like little things in my Rolodex, right?
Yeah.
And like seeing how we can kind of plug that gap that we see. So mm-hmm. yeah, I love my job, and I'm very grateful to get to do the work I do.
That's fantastic.
Meeting people where they are, right?
Exactly.
Right. Isn't it fun to say you love your job?
Yes.
Yeah, it's really amazing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Should I share my
I think if you want to, yeah, wrap us on here.
Okay. Book. I was told to bring a recommendation, and I brought my visual aid, The Sparrow by Mary Doria Russell. I want to talk about this one because it is a book club pick, but not for my book club, for my coworker Steve's sci-fi book club, and it is the best book I've read in the last 6 months. I actually had to borrow my coworker's copy because I insisted he read it. So that is my recommendation. Probably came out 20 years ago at least. It's about Jesuits in space. Check it out.
I didn't realize that was... Okay.
Yep.
The Book of Strange New Things by Michelle Faber is one of my all-time favorite books. It's one of the few books I've read multiple times. And it's also, it's about a missionary in space, but there's a mysterious... It's a great concept to think about. Like,
Super space, science, religion, philosophy, all together in a really fun and emotional book. Would recommend.
Oh, very cool.
Fantastic. Well, Natalie, that's going to wrap it up for your first show.
It's not the last.
Oh no. No, this is fantastic. How are you feeling?
Oh, I had a blast. I could, as you probably notice, we could keep going.
We found out that librarians like to yap.
We actually aren't. You're most likely person to be shushed in a library.
Yes.
That's hilarious. So. That's awesome. Alexis, thank you for being
here.
Thank
you so much, Rich.
Natalie, I can't wait to do this again next month.
I cannot wait, Rich.
All right.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you guys again next month. The first Wednesday, second Wednesday.
Second Wednesday.
Second Wednesday of the month.
Library love.
Library love.
Library love.
Library love.